Welcome back to Money Life at Morningstar, where I'm joined right now by Warren Pearson. He is Co-Chief Investment Officer at the Baird Funds. If you're looking for more information, well, BairdFunds.com will do it. So will RWBaird.com to learn more about the money management firm. And of course, Warren may now be best known on my show for the fact that he's the first person to mention that we were changing from Tina, there is no alternative, to Patty, pay attention to the yield, which several of you in the audience have sort of noted that when other people have been talking about Terra, there are reasonable alternatives, or Tiara, I can't remember what that one's supposed to be, and a variety of others, that the truth is that Patty is the one that kind of resonates most with you. Me too. And that's one of many reasons why I'm happy to get Warren back on the show. Warren, it's great to see you.
Thanks, Chuck. Good to dust Patty off too. We still think she's alive and well, but there's plenty to talk about in the bond market right now.
Well, there is. And you know, it's interesting because we have been through a hell of a first quarter for the year because we had a little unexpected event in the banking space. And you have an event in the banking space and it does affect the bond market, but that's not what anybody was talking about. Everybody was talking about just the banking space. So what's been the fallout? Let's kind of clear out the news as we look at, you know, where we're at now with the second quarter. What's been the fallout for the bond industry from the banking problems?
Yeah, and we would like to talk about the banking. I'll call it an issue. We didn't want to call it a crisis. And I'll just say flat out, we feel very strongly there is not a systemic banking crisis. You know, in some ways, it almost felt like the market was trying to drive a crisis. And I think it stems from, you know, the Fed has raised rates a lot. Those higher rates are a headwind to a lot of companies, a lot of sectors of the market, and even asset classes. And, you know, it's often been said that tightening cycles end when something finally breaks. It was almost as if the market was trying to break something to get the Fed to stop. And isolated crises, it started with Silicon Valley Bank, which seemed like a bank that didn't really have an asset liability management system, you know, grew tremendously, took in a lot of deposits and invested those deposits in high quality assets, but probably pretty far out the curve. And when they lost deposits, you know, it was a run on the bank that it couldn't survive. That spread to other banks. You know, Credit Suisse went down. We thought that was unfortunate. Credit Suisse has had a lot of problems, but, you know, their capital ratios, their liquidity ratios were all fine. They were in good shape, but they couldn't survive. But, you know, the banking system overall is in good shape. There are isolated issues, isolated stress. But again, we feel strongly there's not a systemic banking crisis. Nonetheless, financial conditions have tightened as a result of that. So that maybe provides a little tailwind at the Fed's fight against inflation. The Fed has been raising rates. We think they'll keep rates higher for a while. But now financial conditions in the market have tightened. That will help slow things down a bit.
In terms of tightening, I mean, as you said, you kind of hoped that the banking problems would bring the Fed to the end of its tightening cycle. It hasn't quite gotten there and it hasn't quite been effective. So what do you see in terms of how this plays out?
Yeah, and we've been saying really since the end of last year that focus not so much on what the Fed's terminal rate is. We're pretty close. And you know, as we stand here, will they do another quarter? It looks like the market's expecting them to raise rates another quarter. We think the more important question, though, is how long will they keep, you know, will they stay at that terminal rate? And we're going to take them at their word. We think they're going to stay there for a pretty long time, i.e., you know, really through 2023. This goes back to lessons that they learned in the 70s, where they had tightened dramatically and then inflation, you know, slowed down and then they pivoted and eased only to see inflation resurge. And so we think they learned they don't want to make that mistake again. And something else that's changed, the prior decade plus, the Fed was free to ease, and there really were no concerns about inflation, that you know easing was not going to cause inflationary you know blowups. That's changed now. We saw as a result of coming out of COVID, just the shortages in the labor market, there were some supply chain issues, but really think the big issue for inflation is labor. We don't have enough workers, and there's still some pressure on wages. The Fed is very tuned into that, and they realize if they ease too quickly, they could see inflation roar back, and we don't think they're willing to make that mistake.
Are they willing to get to a point where they say, hey, we've gotten it down to 3%, we know our target was 2, but never mind, mission accomplished?
That's a really good question. Again, we'll take them at their word. They've remained committed, at least verbally, that now we think 2% is the right target. What they have done, though, is extended that timeline out to which they can achieve that. And they're thinking that probably they're not going to hit that 2% target until 2025. And we think longer term, it's really possible for them to do that. We think the long-term growth potential of the U.S. economy is about 2%. That's not real inflationary growth. Coming out of the pandemic, the economy tried to grow at 6%, and that's where the inflationary pressures came from. Our economy is not set up to grow that at that pace. And that's where a lot of the inflationary pressure is. So after things settle down, we think they can get there, but it's going to take a lot of time.
Will it take a lot of time with or without a lot of suffering?
That's a good question. And I think the Fed has, again, you know, if you look what they've been saying over the last several quarters, they recognize that there could be a certain amount of pain that results from their inflation fight. And I think they're willing to let that happen. So, you know, I think we're probably seeing, it looks like now there could be some sort of an earnings recession. Banks, get back to the banks, they're going to have to pay up for their deposits. They had a free ride where they were paying almost nothing for deposits, yet their investment, you know, investing at higher rates. That's changed. They're going to have to raise deposit rates to hold on to those deposits. That's going to shrink their net interest margin, which should probably reduce their earnings, which on the equity side, probably not necessarily a good thing. From the bond side, we look at that. They're probably going to be regulated more tightly. Capital standards are going to have to be snugged up as well. We like that. It's music to our ears as bondholders. But it could present some pain on the equity side.
When you are looking at what could happen, and we're talking about rates and inflation and the rest, one of the key points we have to get to is we now have a rate that is above inflation. Like, that's the point that people are looking for. So here we are talking about when the Fed does whatever. But if the important point for me as a consumer or my audience as investors is, when do we see interest rates outstrip inflation? How long is that going to take?
Well, it gets back to, you know, where will inflation settle out and how long will it take to get there? You know, certainly, we are seeing inflation decline, whether you're looking at CPI, PPI, you know, PCE that the Fed tracks. All those measures are coming down. We think they will continue to come down. The real difficulty is getting inflation that last couple hundred basis points, you know, from 4% to 2%. We think that's where the difficulty is going to come in. So, but, you know, we think investors, they're not only are nominal rates more attractive, but we think in this environment, the real rates that investors have the potential, you know, look more attractive than they've been for a while.
At Baird, you guys are, of course, known for being bond investors, not necessarily known for being the junk bond investors. But it's been really interesting when I talk with guys who are looking at junk that I've had wildly disparate opinions. There are some folks who are like, I would stay away from it. Not quite because it's toxic, because they're not expecting necessarily a massive wave of defaults, but just because there's a lot of uncertainty there. And I've had others who have said, this is the big opportunity right now in bonds. So for you, A, junk, B, where is the big opportunity in bonds?
Yeah, we would fall more on the cautious side against junk. Again, we're primarily an investment grade manager. Our Core Plus fund, can invest up to 20% in below investment grade. Right now, we're between 3 and 4%. We think that some of the asset classes, the risk assets, if you will, probably haven't fully repriced given the rise in interest rates. I talked about stocks, you know, on the banking side, but I think you're seeing across a lot of industries just the pressure of inflation is eroding margins. And so we think I don't know that the stock market has priced in those lower margins and lower earnings, and we would probably toss the high yield market, you know, trade in sympathy with equities. So we would agree to, we're not terribly concerned about the credit conditions in the high yield market. It's not abysmal by any means. Investment grade credit conditions fundamentally look really good. High yield looks okay. It's more the valuation that we'd be cautious of and think there's probably better opportunities, more attractive opportunities with the repricing that could eventually come.
And those opportunities are in what types of bonds?
On the high yield side?
No. On anywhere.
We see great value. And this is, you know, with the rise in rates last year, while it was painful for returns for investors, what it did is it presents great opportunities going forward where investors don't have to take a lot of risk. With the inversion of the curve, they don't have to go way out the curve to get attractive yields, nor do they have to go way down in quality. So we would stay up in quality. The commercial real estate is coming into focus. There are going to be some losses in the commercial real estate market. We like, though, however, CMBS, commercial mortgage-backed securities. We stay in the top most senior issues with 30% credit enhancement at issuance. As those deals season, a lot of times, coverage ratios go up to 40%. Our base case is that in the diversified pools of real estate collateral that back CMBS deals, you could probably see, 5 to 7s, maybe 6 to 8% losses. In a stress case, they could go up to 10 to 12. So there will be some losses. But we see in those most senior CMBS issues, we see some pretty good value. And investment-grade corporates. Well, if we head into a slowdown or into recession, at the margin, those earnings are going to go down, those ratios are going to go down, but they're coming off of really strong metrics on the credit side. So we like investment-grade corporate, and we'd stay more intermediate in terms of the curve. We think that sort of belly of the curve, intermediate maturities, represent really good value for investors.
Warren, great stuff. Thanks so much for joining me at the Morningstar Conference.
All right, Chuck, always a pleasure. We look forward to circling back sometime in the future.
Absolutely. We'll talk to you down the line. That's Warren Pearson. He's the co-chief investment officer at the Baird Funds. BairdFunds.com, RWBaird.com, and on Twitter at RWBaird. We've got much more to go on today's show, so settle back or relax. We're living the money life at Morningstar, and we'll be back with it in a moment.